You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. As always, I am your host, Daniel Lee of Photos by DOEE. So today we're going to be talking about seeing in a focal length, what that's sort of about, just sort of briefly. And I'm also going to be going over my first impressions of the Canon RF 16mm f2.8 and also discussing the Sony a7 IV, which I'm sure for many will be an exciting body, potentially something that I would have got if I'd stuck with Sony. So yeah, I thought it'd be nice to discuss whether I have any regrets for not switching or not staying with Sony, or if I have the gas or urge to switch back now that's been announced. To start off, I'm going to go over some personal updates. So as I mentioned, the 16mm has arrived. I'm going to go over that after, so no need to sort of go into major detail with that now. Things here in Sydney have reopened, so no more 5km rules, so I can drive where as far as I want to take photos. Can also, you know, go out heaps, no having to wear a mask, that kind of stuff. So it's good, much more fun now. So because of that, I can go out, take photos like I usually would, more casual shots. I've been carrying my camera with me, mainly the M50, but I've also carried the R6 with me quite a bit as well. The only problem with that is my girlfriend prefers to go out middle of the day, like literally 11 a.m. midday kind of thing. So, you know, as you know, light is always most harsh at that time. So never really get to get anything really that nice. I did carry the 16mm and the Canon with me not long ago, just like earlier in, well, last week technically now at the time of release, so I could test it, but then my back hurt quite a bit because I thought that my back would be a lot better now in terms of that sort of stuff, but turns out, you know, still bad back if I try and walk too fast with all my camera gear. Now that everything's unlocked, there's about two or so locations I want to shoot from again to do cityscapes. Bit conflicted about what lens to use, because originally I did want to use the 50mm, but now I've got the 16, I'm tempted to use the 16. But at the same time, the 16 is very wide, and I don't know, I'll get into it later, but yeah, I don't know if the 16 will work. I probably, one of the locations is called Man Point here in Sydney. I want to use my 85, because 85 is perfect for it. Even 50 would work okay, but 85, the longer the better technically. Well, not too long, but you know what I mean. Otherwise, this other spot in Darling Harbour, it works quite well with, one works well with the 16, the other works well with the 50. So it's more just a case of which one I want to use. And the sunset's getting later and later now, and I don't like being out too late. And by late, I mean like 7. You know, I like being home early, especially on a weeknight. So I'll see how I go with that. But yeah, otherwise that's it. There's not too much personal updates for me in terms of that. Always wrestling stuff to talk about, always TV shows, always games. But when it comes to purely that, that's it. Actually, I will say one thing. I covered it in my blog post about my, it's photography related, but I got a Nintendo Switch, the new OLED version, and I want to take photos of it. I ended up using my 50, 35, and 85, all three of them, to take one shot each of it. The 50 was just a casual shot of the box, which I quite like. But the shot I used to always kind of take for any new item, I tried taking with my 85mm, and it wasn't anything to do with the lens, but that setup I used to always use, I just don't enjoy as much. So if you're familiar with my photos, or you look through my Flickr and that, when I got my Sigma 85mm f1.4 Art, the DN1, I took that kind of photo. I took that photo as well for my pocket watch, for my us, something else I bought a while ago. There's a few things I actually used that setup for, which I don't know, I just got bored of it now. I want something different. So I took my photo of my Switch. I thought I was happy with it, but in the end, I wasn't happy with it. It's not quite what I wanted. So I haven't done any kind of real low-key, any kind of style shots in a while, so I thought I'd give it a try. So I did that with the Switch. I shot it on pure black card, and I got the neon Joy-Cons, so they're nice and colorful. So it's pretty much just mostly black. You can see a little bit of detail on the Switch. It's more just you can see the white Switch logo and the Joy-Cons. I personally really like it, but you know, each to their own. Some may not like it as much as the other shot, whereas this one to me is minimalistic and was really good. I said ages ago that I want to be more minimalistic in my photography, but yeah, it's something you have to really sort of practice and learn. Well, yeah, that's officially it for my updates. Now onto the news. So first piece of news, the Sigma 18-50mm f2.8 DCDN has been announced. So this by Sigma has been billed as the smallest and lightest f2.8 zoom lens for APS-C format mirrorless cameras in the market. It is coming to E-mount and L-mount. I'm honestly pretty sad it's not coming to Canon EFM. This lens actually looks very small. Image quality looks really good. It's something I would actually consider buying. although it could be a little bit long, because I think I know for this, you know, on L mount and E mount, it's a 27 to 75 millimeter focal length equivalent. But because Sony in that, they have a 1.5 times crop factor, whereas 18 times 1.6, because, you know, I'm really, really bad at maths. I have no clue what that would be. And I can't even do it on a calculator. Maybe it's because I'm talking as well, but 1.6, so 28 millimeters. So it's sort of like a 28 and I think about like 80 or 82, 50 times 1.6. Yeah, so it's like a 28 to 80. So not too bad a focal range. Might be a bit, I don't know, it's not as wide as it could be, like a proper 24 to 70, but it'd still be a nice lens on Canon. Not to mention Fuji, they could release on Fuji X-mount as well, which I'm surprised they haven't done that. This otherwise has a minimum focus distance of 12.1 centimeters, weighs 290 grams, has 13 elements in 10 groups, which one is an SLD element and three others are spherical elements. Sigma says those lens-free high-precision glass molded as spherical overall yields superb optical quality without excessive weight. Seven-bladed rounded aperture with dust and splash resistance. And a cost of $549, which is very reasonable for a constant f2.8 zoom like this. I personally think it's good how Sigma have really started to focus on lens size and quality and weight. I hope they continue that, especially with their more full-frame lenses. Like with the 35mm f1.4 DNR, everyone expected that to be smaller, but it was barely any size savings over the original one. So, you know, it's a bit strange why they didn't try and go for a smaller design. May have been too hard without making some compromises, but when you look at it, the 35GM managed to do that. It's smaller, lighter, and yeah, image quality is excellent, so who knows why they weren't able to do that as well. Next up, Samyang announces a 24-70 2.8 PAR focal lens. So Samyang as well have called this the first all-in-one zoom that made it to celebrate 50 years since the founding of its business. So usually, you know, they don't really market their stuff as video, but apparently for this one, they're very focused on how it can be used for both. And they actually mentioned has several features optimized for video shooting that it believes will suit those who need to work as both a photographer and a videographer in a growing space of hybrid creatives. The focus position does not change even when users are zooming in or out. Therefore, it meets the needs of shooting both stills and video for various purposes. It has 17 elements in 9 groups. The barrel of it has premium material that is weather sealed in 7 different spots to protect it from light, rain, or dust. Which sort of begs the question, if this is premium material, what are they using on their other lenses? The STM focus motor has been put in it, which, you know, I'm not too big on STM focus motors because I feel like they're more noisy. And it has a price of $999. So when you look at it, image quality wise, all that kind of stuff, it is quite impressive. It does look nice, but I still don't, you know if it would hold up over time, what the image quality would actually be like in, you know, non-controlled images, you know, ones that aren't released by them or that people or anyone could take. Otherwise, if you're looking for this kind of, you want something for both, you want something on the budget as well. To be honest, you're going to struggle to find the 24-70 at that price in general, $999. Even the Sigma Art, you know, the new DN 24-70, I think, or is it 28-70 is more than that. So this price-wise is really good and it definitely will appeal to someone, but it just depends on what kind of quality and what kind of stuff you're looking for in a lens. When I owned the Samyang 85mm f1.4 AF lens, I liked it image quality-wise, but I just didn't feel like it had the same quality as the Sigma lenses in terms of build quality. Like the weight wasn't that much different between the Sigma 85 and the Samyang 85, but the Sigma just had this real solid feel about it. It felt like more quality compared to the Samyang. You know, each person, if some people are happy with those cheaper lenses, but I personally like something very solid as well. It doesn't have to be heavy, but you know, you can feel with a lens, whether it's cheaply made or it's not, you know, it's more expensive and more feels to have that quality premium feel. On to the last piece of news, which is the big one. The Sony Alpha A7 IV has finally been announced. So, you know, just before, a day or so before release, one of the preview videos from Tony and Chelsea Northrup had leaked. So a lot of the specs and pricing and all that kind of stuff had come out. I'll go over the sort of specs and I'll talk about what I think of it, whether it's I have a regret for switching to Canon or not. So 33 megapixel backside illuminated sensor. This is up from 24 on the previous, you know, A7 Mark III. It's kind of good, you know, I guess it's one disappointment already on my side. And I think a few people are that it's not a stack sensor. Stack sensors generally seem to cost a lot more to manufacture and would obviously drive the price up even more. But they obviously have a lot more benefits as well due to that faster read speed, which means, you know, stuff like electronic shutter works a lot better without banding. From what I've read, based on DP review and all that kind of stuff, they found that it has a readout speed of 1/115th of a second, which is slower than the Canon R6. So if you look at some photos, that does suffer from warping. So, you know, say you're taking a panning shot, you can actually see the movement in the shot. So lines of the poles or whatever that are meant to be straight won't be straight. They'll actually be on a curve. If you never use electronic shutter, then I guess it's okay for you. But at the same time, if you want the faster FPS, then you're going to need to use electronic shutter, silent shutter, especially if you're a wedding photographer and you have a venue that doesn't, or the couple that doesn't want any noise. Not being able to use that silent shutter could be a big downside for you, depending on your shooting style, as I mentioned. 759 phase detection autofocus points with 94% coverage of the sensor, and features real-time autofocus for humans, animals, and birds. So eye autofocus. So when it says that, that's the thing I haven't really seen specified. When it's I guess, because technically if you're tracking subjects, it's usually either a human or an animal, that kind of stuff. So I guess that's where it comes into it. But when you watch certain preview videos so far, I'll probably just talk about each spec once I go through it, but you'll find a lot of them don't really go into as much detail as I would like. So when it comes to reviews, there's sort of three people I really trust, which would be Jared Poland, Gordon Lang, and Dustin Abbott. Now, three of those, like Dustin, for example, he shoots Sony and Canon. I don't even know what Gordon shoots, to be honest. I don't know much about his like photography side, his more casual photography side of things, to know which brand he prefers and that sort of stuff. But he just always seems to call it very down the middle and be very accurate with his reviews. And then Jared Poland, I always find he does really good bias-free. Like, he honestly does a lot of clickbait stuff, but he'll do it against everyone. Even though he shoots Sony, he'll do like anti-Sony, then pro-Sony, then anti-Canon, pro-Canon, anti-Nikon, pro-Nikon, that kind of stuff. Not to mention he uses all Canon cameras for his videos now. So the R5 and the R6 are used to film everything. He shoots with Sony himself personally. And, you know, he used to love Nikon. He used to be the biggest Nikon supporter. So he doesn't really have a dog in any of the fights. He really calls it down the middle. That's why I like his stuff. Say what you will about him. I think because we're in the same, he's quite a bit older than me, but we're in that same sort of age group sense of humor. I think he's like 40, whereas I'm early 30s, but a lot of the jokes he tells, I still get, you know, like it was one episode, I can't remember what video he was doing or whether it was his podcast. He was a Yogi Bear and like, you know, just stuff like that. Stupid jokes. Most people don't find funny in that, but I think it's really funny. He was doing a video critique of all these images and there was a bear in a tree. So like, hey, Yogi Bear, how are you? Like doing that kind of, I thought it was funny. I always lose it when he does that kind of stuff, but I know a lot of people don't find it funny. But yeah. He did a video and he didn't call it a review because he's saying it's not a review unless you have a proper production unit, which everyone has pre-production units. But in his test, the R6 was actually tracking better than the Sony. And even like when I watched Kai Wong, he done a video of it as well. He was saying it was pretty good, but when they were filming it and he was trying to track Locke just slowly riding around on the scooter, it kept jumping from the background to Locke. It wasn't actually staying locked in on Locke, funny enough. No pun intended. Now, from what I remember with Sony, you could sort of adjust the tracking, but I know on Canon you have different cases. So if you've never shot a Canon body or you have had one that doesn't have it, you have AF cases. So for example, case one or auto case may not have no preference and it'll just make it up as it goes. Whereas case two, if you start tracking something, it's going to stick to that item as much as possible. Even if, you know, something comes in the front and that item shows up again, it'll stick right to that item. It definitely didn't look as good as the R6, which is surprising, but you know, that's that, I guess. They're the same price, but yeah. Apparently it has the latest autofocus algorithms which achieve high precision down to low light levels as low as 4 EV and AFS mode, so that's single shot. Now, if you're not familiar with mirrorless bodies or Sony bodies specifically, you'll find that Sony autofocus, if you can look this up regardless of me, that's how I know it, is because quite a few people have reported on and that kind of stuff. Sony bodies are more optimized to use ASC, so autofocus continuous, than they are autofocus single shot. I don't know about newer bodies like A1, A7 R4, but you'll find in, say like with my A7 Mark III, when you shot an AFS, it would always jump back and forth to make sure it's in focus, even with a first party lens. Whereas with Canon, you know, AFS will generally go right on the spot. But I've seen a lot of people who are new to mirrorless get confused when the autofocus isn't as good as they think it should be. But often the time is the problem there is, the problem is they are using AFS, not AFC, or on Canon server. What you think is you're like, oh, my subject's not moving, so why do I need to use continuous autofocus? But you're moving it. The way I do it is, okay, if my camera is on a tripod and my subject is static, so both items are static, AFS. If my camera is on the tripod but my subject is moving, you know, I'm static but they're not, it will be AFC, so continuous autofocus server. If my subject is static but I'm handheld, so I'm moving, then I'd use continuous, because even though the subject's not moving, if you're shooting especially at a shallow depth of field, say I focus on the person, that time between I focus and I take the photo, I can sway back and forth. And if you're shooting at f1.4, 1.2, that kind of thing, even sometimes 1.8, that can actually put the focus off. So might be slightly in focus, but not as sharp as it could be. Whereas if you're shooting in continuous, if you're slowly, very slowly moving back and forth, you're still going to have it in focus because the focus is moving with you as you make those tiny micro movements. And then, yeah, obviously if the subject's moving and I'm moving, then yeah, definitely servo. To me, it's either you're using servo in, if you're holding the snow tripod, and or if the subject is moving. Only time you're using a tripod is if you're or the camera's on the tripod and the subject's static and not moving at all. Not just like a person, so like, you know, product photography, landscape, that kind of stuff. It can shoot apparently 828 continuous uncompressed RAW plus JPEG. From what I've seen, the buffer, like in a few tests, so Jared Polin, he does quite a good test on the buffer. It could only do 6 FPS pretty much, uncompressed RAW. Because what he does is he takes the photos and just looks at the exact time to see how many per second, so that way he can calculate how many per second, which is quite a good way, quite a smart way of doing it. If you do want to shoot, you know, faster FPS, then you're going to have to unfortunately shoot in lossy compressed RAW, which for many people, you know, like myself for one, would not be an option. I want to always shoot uncompressed and lossless as well. In terms of EVF, it did get an upgrade. It's 3.68 million dot OLED viewfinder with both 60 and 120 frames per spec selectable frame rate. So just like my Canon R6, I think it's like two dots, mine's 3.65 or something, 66 or something like that. Much, much better viewfinder, although it's still not the best, and they could have, you know, put something like what the A7R uses, especially with the price, but otherwise it should be fine, like more than good enough. It's much better than what the previous model had anyway. Here's one that caused a lot of controversy. So 1.036 million dot fully articulating rear screen. So a lot of people don't like fully articulating screen. I obviously, you know my stance, the camera is DOA, like dead on arrival. Without it, it has to have one for me. So I'm happy about that. Then come in much more handy when you do product and still life photography and want to shoot from all different angles in front of the camera, that sort of stuff. You know, self-portraits, they make it so much easier. Also shooting vertical and vertical sort of any kind of vertical photo from low or high angles, it makes it a lot easier as well. But the main disappointment is how low resolution the screen is. I noticed with Canon as well though, usually if they have a fully articulating screen, the image quality isn't as good. Not so much image quality, but the pixels per inch or the dots, you know, how many million dots there is, will never be as high as if it was a fixed screen. I don't know if it's because of the fact that they have to make it sort of articulating. It's limited with what displays can be used in that. Either way, I think it's a good, very good upgrade. That's one of the things I was disappointed about my original A7 and what made me want to swap out, because I missed the screen. And I just had a quick look because I was curious, because, you know, I originally said that I think because it's fully articulating, that's why they use a lower resolution screen. But I just checked the Canon EOS R3 and that one actually has a 4.15 million dot LCD screen, which is fully articulating, which means it's not just sort of, you know, I thought it was because it's fully articulating, you can use too high a res screen, but turns out it's not that. So I'd say it's more likely a pricing reasoning for that's why they use that screen and not sort of a more high res one. Now, it is meant to have in-body stabilization rated up to 5.5 EV. Now, you see a lot of mixed stuff online. I've read on Reddit, a DP review did an AMA, so ask me anything, about, you know, how well this IBIS performs. From what I can tell, because there's a lot of stuff going around that it's not as good as the A7 III, it does look like for the A7R, so say A7 IV, they've added something called gyro data to sort of help with the stabilization, but they've sort of looked more into the more computational ways of improving it rather than just straight up what like Canon use, whereas all in body. So the rumors of it being not as good may actually be true. Obviously, I haven't used one. I don't think I'm going to get to use one, so I can't say for certain, but it does seem like those kind of rumors are true. There's twin card slots, one CF Express A and one UFHS 2 card. So with that CF Express card, you can actually use a UHS 2 card in it as well. So, you know, depending if you don't want to spend the money on CF Express, you can easily just use two UHS 2 cards. The shutter does close when the camera's off, which is previously only on the A1 and the A92. It's a great feature. I have it turned on my R6. You know, I'd never turn it off. I haven't had an issue with sensor dust, touch wood, you know, since that. It weighs 659 grams, a little bit heavier than the A7 Mark III, but it has got a wider grip, the same one as the A7S series now. The price is $2,499 US or $3,999 AUD. I think it's around 2700 euro, that kind of stuff. I forgot, somewhere around there. AUD pricing pretty much puts it out of my price range, so I'll get into my impressions now, even more so. But the only reason I could afford the R6 was because I was downgrading lenses and I had a lot of high-end Sony lenses. So when I swapped over, I was selling everything and buying a more minimal kit with Canon. If I was going to Sony, I would have only been selling off that one body and that's it. And I think I got like 2,000, 2,100, that kind of stuff for it. So if that was the case, I would have to pay another $2,000 just to get this body, which is a lot of money, which, to be honest, I don't think it was that much of a substantial upgrade over the A7 Mark III. Like, for me personally, the main upgrades that stand out, well, actually, to be honest, it's quite a lot depending on what you care about. So the main upgrade, so I don't really care about megapixels. I 100 still stand by that. I'm using a 20 megapixel full frame camera, so that should be enough evidence. But for me, the main big upgrades is the autofocus, because the tracking was quite bad on the A7 Mark III. It never got real-time tracking, so it was good for eye autofocus, but say, for example, when I did street photography, if I tried to track a person, person's a distance away and they're walking towards me and I try to track them, it would not stick to them. It would jump all over the place. So that's a big upgrade. The EVF is a big upgrade. Fully articulating screen, for me, big upgrade. The two card slots, I don't even use the two card slots now. I didn't use them when I did my A7 Mark III. Don't use them on the R6. I just use a second slot just to hold a SD card there in case. But either way, the fact that it's not slowed down, it's not a bottleneck, because they're the same speed now, both UHS 2 or CF Express, and that's a big improvement. And the closing shutter is a good one. The one thing that would really stop me from wanting to get this camera, you know, if it wasn't for the price as well, obviously, would be no bulb timer. From what I know, Sony still don't have a bulb timer. So, you know, for those who are unaware of what that is, rather than when you do bulb mode, something that, you know, someone does landscapes, cityscapes, long exposures a lot like me, rather than set the time, you know, so you can do up to 30 seconds, over 30 seconds, you need to do bulb and a remote timer, usually from a lot of cameras. I believe Canon, Olympus, and Fuji, I think those three do it. You have a bulb timer where you just go into the camera settings, you can add it to your quick menu or whatever, and you can set how long. So if I want to set 2 minute exposure, I set 2 minutes, 2 second self timer, boom, set that off. The camera does the exposure. At the end of that 2 minutes, it stops itself. You don't actually have to do it. It even has a little timer come up on the screen to show you that, which is really, really good. For me, with what I shoot, it's a must. I don't even bring out the release remote trigger anymore now because of that. Mainly because it's so much easier just to use that 2 second timer. Remote trigger can still help because it's easier than touching the camera. You're going to have even less vibrations as well. But otherwise, yeah, I'm definitely happy with my choice to get the R6. I don't have any regrets now seeing what the A7 IV has to offer. If it was $399, like $3,000, like I think originally launched it like $2,999 AUD, and I managed to sell my A7 Mark III for like $21, I'm a $900 out of pocket, I don't think it would be that bad. I would consider this a good upgrade, especially if it had the bulb timer. But, you know, I have zero regrets about switching to Canon. Dynamic range has improved so much on Canon, so I don't feel any difference in that regard. Autofocus is really good. I have zero complaints about that, especially when it comes to tracking. So, yeah, I have zero gas from it, zero regrets. I honestly would have more gas from Sony lenses than I do from the actual bodies. So I like Canon lenses, but I like Canon bodies, but I know Sony have really nice lenses. 51 2GM, 35 14GM, 135 GM. I could easily build that kit, like I mentioned a while ago, get the 20 1.8G lens, 35 14, Sigma 85mm art, and maybe like the 135 or a Sigma 100-400 or Tamron 100-400, that kind of thing. Could easily build a kit on Sony. But either way, I'm in the Canon camp now. It's not going to change anytime soon. unless I, you know, have the money to buy a second body or I want a Sony body. But yeah, that's it for my impressions of the thing. So now on to the main topic, seeing in the focal length and the Canon R f/16mm. So when it comes to this lens, as I've mentioned multiple times, it was a dream lens of mine, mainly because I always wanted the 16mm prime. I see so many people say it's a weird focal length for a prime, but it's not. It's honestly so good. Because when you think about it, you have so many 14mm primes, but then 16-35 is such a common zoom, so it makes sense for there to be a 16mm prime. It works so well because it's not too wide, it distorts way too much, but it's also not too long, you know, like you can take 20mm, it's good, but then it's not going to be able to fit as much in for a lot of scenarios. So of course, you know, as soon as I seen this lens go on sale, I think it's $299 US and it's like $470 or $480 Australian, so pretty decent pricing to be honest. I had to buy it. I pre-ordered it, just got it last week at time of release. So yeah, in terms of image quality, so, you know, usually for image quality, you got your sharpness, your rendering. For a 16mm lens, I don't feel like the rendering can usually have anything that special. I usually, for me personally, I don't see it being as unique. Sometimes it can be with your colors and that, but otherwise I have no issues with the rendering. For sharpness, it seems very sharp to me. I don't know if it'd be as sharp as some of the lenses I own, like say the 16-35 f2.8 GM lens or even the 16-35 f4. I'd have to use it more to really be able to definitively say if it's as sharp as those. I have noticed it to be very sharp in the tests I've done so far. The main issue I would say is the distortion. So this lens, like many newer lenses recently, relies on in-body corrections. If you have them turned on in your body where it's R, RP, R6, R5, you'll find it gets rid of most of it, but not all. There's still no Lightroom profile yet for the Canon IF16mm f2.8. Once that comes out, it'll probably make it even better, but at the moment, there isn't anything, so keep that in mind. I found if you shoot with in-body corrections, then you use the profile for the 24-240mm and then set that to 130. I read that on Fred Miranda forum, so can't remember who said that, but whoever said that, I think it's J-Man. He gets the credit for that, not my idea. I can't even remember if it was him, I feel someone else, but either way, whoever it was on the FM forums, thank you for that. Otherwise, yeah, build quality, it's just like the 50mm f1.8. So if you have no issues with that, you wouldn't have any issues with this. Autofocus, you know, for such a focal length, I haven't seen any issues with it. I'm a bit sort of careful about it because it's such a small lens when I have my filters and everything attached to it. I'm a bit cautious about how much I autofocus with that on there because I feel like you can hear the motor work a bit harder. So maybe that's something to keep in mind if you have heavy filters on there, but otherwise I don't think that was an issue, major anything. So yeah, I'm pretty happy with the lens, but that's where the seeing a focal length comes in because I've been shooting with more longer focal lengths for so long, I forgot how to use 16mm. So as I mentioned multiple times, I've actually started to enjoy long focal lengths more, like, you know, your 50, 85 and even longer, especially for cityscapes, landscapes, that kind of stuff. I haven't even been using 35 as much because of the fact that I like longer even more now. 35 I'd still 100% say is the most versatile, but it's not always my favorite. But either way, when I used this 16mm lens, I found I wasn't able to easily compose images as I used to be when I was used to using a 16-35. The main reason is when you see a focal length, what I mean by that is if you use the focal length so much, so say like 35mm, you know how to compose everything without even thinking about it twice. You know, when I used to use 35 all the time, I'm pretty sure I've said this multiple times, but I used to be able to just pull the camera up to my eye and it would have the perfect composition right away because I knew my working distance perfectly. Now I'm more like that with 50 or 85, whereas with 35, I'm a bit off now. I tend to frame it a bit wider than what I want. And with 16mm, even more so, because 16 is really, really wide. I completely forgot how wide it is. Don't get me wrong, it's really good to have this kind of wide focal length, but for certain images, I don't like it too wide anymore. I like to fill the frame and, you know, like how I've been trying to do more longer focal length cityscapes because I find, depending on how far you are, if you're too far with, say, like a 16mm, you'll have too much empty space, just water and sky at the top or whatever. Whereas I like to have as much of the subject filling the frame as possible, which is where I'd rather shoot with a longer focal length and then and then do a panorama sort of thing. The reason why I mentioned crop is I find with this one, I did a light trails photo, which was on my blog post on photosbydoe.com. And I found that I do like the much wider view because it's easier to crop it to a 4x5 when shooting in vertical. So that helps a lot there. So as I mentioned, you know, when you're looking at seeing in a focal length, it does help you because it makes shooting faster. knowing exactly what composition you get from what distance, you can frame stuff a lot quicker. So if you're a street photographer, you know, a special moment that could be happening, say someone's proposing, you may want to take a photo of it, but if you keep having to move around, adjust, I guess that's where zooms come in. But, you know, for example, if you want to do that, you need to know exactly where you are at that time. Whereas the time you take to adjust, that shot could be gone, which is why seeing the focal length really helps in that sense. If you're just simply out and about, you're wanting to plan a photo and you don't have your camera with you, you could honestly, if you know that focal length well enough, you could tell exactly how far you need to be to get good composition without even having your camera there to look. It also, there's downsides to seeing in a focal length. So if, like, for example, you get too used to seeing in 35mm, it can be hard to use other lenses, and it's good to be able to be confident and competent with all different styles of lenses and different focal lengths and everything. It's, you know, always good to challenge yourself, always good to try different stuff. You know, and if you make it hard to use other focal lengths, it could limit your creativity. So say, for example, you're 100% set on using 35mm for this product shot, but it just isn't working. So you end up giving up and trying something else. If you try that with the 85, maybe that could fill the frame more, could get you that exact subject separation you wanted. Lots of different options and lots of different possibilities. That's why it is always important to try all different kinds of focal lengths. It's good, I think, to see in a few lenses. So if you're very confident with 35 and 85, that's a really good combo. Or say 50 and 135, 50 and 24, that kind of thing. Really comes down to your style and all that. But yeah, otherwise that's it for this episode. So if you enjoyed listening, please make sure to subscribe. Reach out, say hello on Twitter at photosbydlwe.com or the TPE Twitter as well. All the links are in the show notes. If you want to see my personal work, you can follow me on Twitter at photosbydlwe.com. Or on my blog, photosbydlwe.com. All photography just on that account. No wrestling talk, no gaming talk. Unless I sometimes forget to switch accounts. There's a few times where I've done that, but I delete the post and put on the correct account. But otherwise, if you do want to suggest a topic that you think I could possibly talk about, there's a link in the show notes where you can submit a topic there, suggestion. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening. See ya.